are listening to KBUT Crested Butte KGNI.
are listening to KBUT 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and 94.9 in Almont, and worldwide at kbut.org. This is Community Matters, KBUT's public affairs program, and I'm your host, Kate Knapp. In this episode, we will catch up with Kathy Pagano of Gunnison County Community and Economic Development and Gunnison County Commissioner Laura Puckett Daniels. We're going to learn more about the development of a trail connecting Crested Butte and CB South. For nearly three decades now, the Gunnison Valley has dreamed of a connector path between Crested Butte and CB South. They're now connected by a 7.5-mile stretch of Highway 135, and that carries about an average of 7,000 vehicles each day. It's also the only paved year-round access to Crested Butte. We have Kathy Pagano and Laura Puckett Daniels here on the line. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having us. Yeah. So happy to be here.
Thank you. So as I mentioned, this project is nearly three decades in the making. Kathy, do you want to start by getting us into the history of this project? How did we get here?
Sure, you bet. Thanks, Kate. So I am somewhat new to the project in that I've only been kind of related to it for the past five or so years. But in researching the project and talking with county staff, including Marlene Crosby, who was a deputy county manager for many years, well, for nearly 40 years, this has really been a priority of the community and something that the county staff, through the prior trail,
breaking up a little bit, Kathy.
Oh. All right. Sorry, Kate.
Don't worry.
Marlene Crosby shared with me some minutes from the Board of County Commissioners meeting back in 2002. And the community is having really the same conversation about a desire for a private trail alignment versus one on the highway right-of-way. And, you know, it seems like we've been really having that conversation and trying to find an opportunity for a private trail alignment for at least since the early 2000s.
Yeah, that's so much history. And it's mentioned, too, on Gunnison County's website that we have about 2,600 residents in CB South. So that connector trail would serve a pretty large population.
Absolutely. You know, CB South is going to be one of our largest population centers in the county. And so I think county agrees, and the connecting CB South to the town of Crested Butte makes a lot of sense. And with a lot of the board's goals around reducing vehicle miles traveled and reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah. And as we've kind of talked about, this stretch of highway includes multi-generational ranch lands, industrial land uses, housing developments, wildlife, and the East and Slate Rivers. How are we going to make a trail through all of these different elements? And how did we kind of figure out these alignments?
Yeah, you bet. And so, you know, we know that a trail has been a really important community priority. As I mentioned, the Trails Commission and community members have long discussed, you know, could there be opportunity for alignment across private property? And as you described in your kind of question there, there are a number of different private property owners and interests in that area. And, you know, I, for the past 3 or 4 months, and then prior to me, you know, Deputy Manager Marlene Crosby have been really reaching out to those private property owners for a very long time. And so I did that again this summer as we were pursuing this project. And while we did have an offer from the Spann family for a small portion of a trail alignment, there were at least for that opportunity, 11 other property owners after that that would need to agree to a an alignment for a trail. And when I did that outreach to those folks and their representatives, they supported the trail, but they were not interested in a trail crossing their property. So that there was no opportunity for negotiation there. That just was something that they were not interested in.
Right. I think that's, yeah, important for folks to know is that there's this kind of patchwork of different land uses, and you have to work around that. And so part of that is why we have this highway alignment. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. So when, you know, that wasn't the only option I looked at or that we looked at for a private property alignment, there was two other kind of routes that might have been possible. And so we did explore both of those and were met with similar sentiments from landowners that, you know, they were supportive of a trail property. So when we got that feedback, you know, we really took the direction that we received from the STORE subcommittee back in 2021, which included representatives from the CB South POA board, SIMBA, Crested Butte Land Trust, and others. And that direction was to pursue an alignment in the highway right-of-way. So we did that and have been working with a consultant team to identify, you know, where it could go in the highway right-of-way.
Yeah, and could you guys speak to, maybe Laura, you could take this question, where you are in the process of this potential trail development? We've kind of had some open houses and opportunities for community feedback. Where are we now?
Great question. I think it's really important to us at the county that whatever trail alignment we end up with, whatever trail we end up with, is something that people know about, that they want to use, that they're excited about. And so we're really seeking community input. And we have a survey that is out right now. It's available on our website, gunnisoncounty.org. That survey does focus on the three highway alignments, which we can talk about in a little more detail as well here, so people know what they're looking at. But the survey will be open till October 8th. We heard a desire from the community to keep that open a little longer, and we're happy to do so. We don't have other open houses planned at this point, but we're certainly taking feedback in other ways. We've gotten quite a few emails, and I've filled in some of those. Kathy has too. So happy to take one-on-one feedback if people are so inclined to reach out that way.
That's great. So, yeah, let's get into the three different alignment options. Can we kind of describe those a little bit?
Yeah, so we have three alignment options. They are all within the highway right-of-way. And when I say right-of-way, I know for folks that might be in the public, that generally means kind of on either side of the highway, basically where the fence lines are right now. And so we're trying to look at which side of the highway might be the most effective, safe, and kind of widest route possible for the trail. We have alignment A, which is generally on the east side of the highway, and that would go from Cement Creek Road all the east side of the highway and then up to Brush Creek Road where the Delhi Trail begins. And then we have alignments B and C, which cross the highway kind of around where Whetstone Industrial Park actually just begins, south of Bill Lacey's property or his driveway. And so those two alignments kind of have a jog back and forth across the highway, which would potentially require an underpass, or would certainly require an underpass at those locations. So we're trying to understand from folks, you know, if they prefer to kind of be all on one side of the highway, or if those underpasses and connections to Whetstone Industrial Park and or Riverland are something that the community would also like to see.
Hmm. And what else would you like folks to know about this project? I mean, you know, why has it taken two decades or more to kind of get to this point?
I can take that a little bit, Kathy, if you want, and you can jump in if you want to add anything. I think there's a couple things. One, I've heard folks say that it's just too far and people aren't going to ride their bikes that far. And I think that, you know, we've seen our community grow and change, and we've got folks riding more. We also have a lot more folks on the road driving, and so I think that the desire for alternate modes of transportation has increased, and the advent of e-bikes is really changing how people move across the landscape. We've seen it in around town. We've seen it on the portion of the rec path between Crested Butte and Mount Crested Butte, but I think there is a lot of potential for folks to be doing more bike commuting from CB South and Crested Butte with e-bikes, and that distance is less of a hurdle. So I think, you know, that's just one additional piece that makes it desirable at this time, and maybe a little bit more feasible, because one of the things that gets debated in these many decades is how much people are really going to use it. Another piece is that Gunnison County has really been successful at our major landmark projects like sage-grouse protections and working towards a mine-free Mount Emmons through collaboration. Our partners, our conversation, our long, steady work of working together is how we've been successful at solving our problems. And so we've really taken that same approach to this bike trail. We want to work collaboratively with CB South, with other subdivisions that exist between CB South and the town. We want to work collaboratively with the ranching families and CDOT to come up with a solution that has the most advantages and the least negative impacts to the folks around there. And it's just complicated. I think we've talked ourselves in circles for 30 years because there's a strong desire amongst the recreational community for a scenic off-highway alignment, but there are significant barriers there. And so every time we hold out for that off-highway private land alignment, we're unable to find all the right partners to come to the table and be willing to make that happen. And so one of the exciting things right now is that we really have felt heard from the community that they want to see something come through. They want to see a bike path, and they want to feel safer out there. And so we're interested in these right-of-way alignments because they will have fewer of those private property hurdles to get through. Not to say there aren't any hurdles at all, crossing driveways and managing irrigation water and everything will certainly be a part of the conversation. But we do feel at this time like, you know, the community has had this conversation. We continue to have it. We're happy to continue to have it if the community wants to wait and try to get landowners on board. But right now, this seems like a path forward that could happen in the next, you know, 1 to 5 years.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Hey, can I add something, Kate, about the alignment?
Oh, absolutely.
This question came up last week, and I just wanted to make sure the public has more information. Folks asked about if this path might be attached or detached from the highway, and so I think it's really important to know that as much as possible, we will try to locate the trail as far as possible from the highway. So there are certainly, particularly after you cross Slate River and get up to the Lacey property, there's quite a bit of room on the east side of the highway to locate the trail, at least 20 feet or more away from the highway. As we get closer to Bill Lacey's property, there is some topography that will force the trail close to the highway. But in all cases, our intent is to locate the trail as far from the highway as possible.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that, Kathy. I mean, you had mentioned too, even in last week's meeting on this subject, that there's such a high level of collaboration here that it's almost like a marriage.
Yeah. I mean, I think not everyone is married or thinks that that's the right way to go in life. But for me, like, before I got married, everyone talked about how marriage is really hard, and I've been in my relationship 6 years. And so I nodded my head sagely and said, yeah, I bet it is. I'm sure it is. You know, relationships are hard. And then after I got married and you make for us a lifelong commitment to each other, it's hard work to maintain that connection and keep open lines of communication and sort through conflict. And I felt like it was a really good metaphor for what collaboration can look like when we're digging into really hard, meaty issues. If it's easy, we tend to all agree, and then there's a path forward and you don't talk about it for 30 years. But if it's like in a marriage where you might have the same fight annually about where you want to go on vacation or whatever your marriage looks like, in this collaboration, in the marriage of all these partners at the store committee, that conversation that's been resurfacing has been about where we should put a bike trail from CB to CB South. And, we're trying to find new ways to communicate around that. We're trying to find, get more public input, hiring consultants to help us, but really trying to find what is the path forward. And I think with any good collaboration, at some point you have to ask yourself, like, what are the trade-offs? You know, there's trade-offs to either waiting and trying to come up with a private property alignment, the trade-off being uncertainty. We don't know how long it will take. We don't know how that will exactly happen, who will be the landowners that come around to make it possible. The advantage is you get a really beautiful bike trail far from the highway, potentially. But there's, you know, the trade-off is you don't know when it'll happen. Whereas if we focus on this trail in the right-of-way, the trade-off is that you're going to have more cars going by. You have to get out Cement Creek Road from CB South to get onto it. But we're hoping to work through those kinks and figure out what that stuff looks like so that it's safe for everyone. But the benefit would be a trail that comes much sooner. So I think it's like a marriage. You got to think about what are the trade-offs in each decision and ultimately what are you willing to live with so that you get the outcome that's best for the most people.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Laura, do you have anything else to add?
You know, at this time, I think we're really covering it. I'm hesitant to bring this up because even mentioning the words can be really alarming to some people, but One question I keep getting asked is why the Board of County Commissioners doesn't exercise their right to use eminent domain to seize this property for a private land alignment. Mm. And I think it's just important to say that, you know, that's a philosophical decision as well as a political decision. It is not a quick route to a solution. We think it'll take many years to sort through what an eminent domain process could look like and what the lawsuits could be afterwards. We had our county attorney run some numbers, and if we had to go through eminent domain on 10 properties, it would cost, he thinks, at least $15 million, if not closer to $20 million, just to get through the land acquiring process. So not even to build or engineer a trail at the end, just to acquire the right to be there. And so I think it's important for the community to understand that eminent domain isn't something to be taken lightly. It's not something the government takes lightly, or this version of the Board of County Commissioners. And we haven't had that conversation as the three of us in public. If we were to really seriously consider it, it would have to happen as all three of us in a public meeting. But I can speak for myself. Eminent domain is a real, real reach of government into people's private property and to their private property rights. And it's not something I'm interested in. It's not how we do business. It's a good way to blow a lot of trust in your government. And ultimately, I believe that, you know, the government is by and for the people, and we exist because the people have elected us to be here and because they trust us. And so it's really important when we're exercising our powers, whatever they are, that we keep that in mind and that we maintain the trust of people and that we work collaboratively, we maintain open and transparent communication and welcome people into the process. But I think when the government steps in and starts taking other people's land, it really erodes a lot of those other good benefits that we've accumulated here in Gunnison County.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That is important to clarify as well. Another thing I wanted to mention too was that a lot of this conversation took place in the STOR committee. And for folks that don't know what that is, do you want to take the reins and explain?
Sure, I can jump in on that, Kathy.
Sure.
So the STOR committee is a Sustainable Tourism and Outdoor Recreation Committee. It was formed as an outgrowth of the One Valley Prosperity Project, a planning process that took place throughout Gunnison County in the early 2010s. The STOR committee really took shape in 2016. Is that right, Kathy?
2017.
Okay, 2017. And it was an evolution. We used to have the Trails Commission, which got together and talked about trails. But the One Valley Prosperity Project made it pretty clear that we needed to talk about more than trails. We needed to talk about maintenance and stewardship, visitor etiquette, how we were going to manage this tourism economy that we built, because we could see that both those folks that live here and those that were visiting were starting to love our beautiful natural resources to death. And so there are currently 23 sitting members of the STOR committee. They represent a huge array of interest from the Tourism Association, now called the Tourism and Prosperity Project. They've got a member, as well as the Crested Butte Mountain Bike Association. Jake Jones is there for the Crested Butte Land Trust. Chris Parmeter is there representing backcountry hunters and anglers. And all of the government agencies, the land managers, so the Colorado Parks and Wildlife, the U.S. Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management. And it's a room where, you know, when you get 23 voices in the room with sometimes competing interests, you're going to have lively discussion about a lot of topics such as this trail. But I think it's a really important forum for where we can vet these ideas, we can hash out pros and cons, hash out conflicting opinions, and hopefully reach a consensus that is an accurate representation of what the folks in the community desire and ultimately solve some problems. One of the things we've done is move from dispersed camping on the National Forest to designated dispersed camping. So you can't just pull it anywhere now. You have to go to a numbered site and camp there. But the Forest Service was seeing a real degradation of the natural landscape around campsites. They were seeing some places where the vegetation had been fully eroded, and they wanted to manage their natural resources better. And so the STOR committee leaned in and helped with that. The Tourism Association got the word out about it. Folks from the CDCC, the Crested Butte Conservation Corps, worked on both inventorying and decommissioning campsites. And a lot of folks in that room helped make that change happen because it was something we all could come together around. And so I'm hoping that this conversation around the CB to CB South Trail that's happening in the SOAR committee can also lead to really good community outcomes like we've seen before.
Thank you so much. Kathy, do you have anything to add?
Well, I don't think so. I just encourage folks to take the survey and happy to, you know, hear folks' input. And if you have any questions, you can always reach out to me directly via email or give me a call. And all my contact information is on our website at gunnisoncounty.org.
Yeah, that's right. So the project information is located at gunnisoncounty.org, just like Kathy mentioned. You can learn more there, and they also have the link to the survey. Thank you guys so much for joining us today and talking about this. It's been great.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. And for those just tuning in, we were just catching up with Kathy Pagano of Gunnison County Community and Economic Development and Gunnison County Commissioner Laura Puckett Daniels to learn more about the development of a trail connecting Crested Butte and CB South. Stay tuned. We are going to hear from Project Hope. They're our local nonprofit that works to support, educate, and provide confidential advocacy to individuals affected by domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. We'll learn more about what those efforts mean here locally as a part of Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Stay tuned. This is community radio for the Gunnison Valley. KBUT Crested Butte, 90.3, 88.7 KGNI Gunnison, and worldwide at kbut.org. We are here with Project Hope Executive Director Amy Kirschbaum, and we're going to learn more about Project Hope. Project Hope works to support, educate, and provide confidential advocacy to individuals affected by domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. And October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Welcome, Amy.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
So for folks that are unfamiliar with this organization, can we start with a little bit of the history?
Sure. So Project Hope has been around under different names since 1984. There was a family actually in Crested Butte who donated a house to house people who were victims of domestic violence. Through the years, it has joined forces with some other agencies. We no longer have a shelter per se. We've adapted through COVID and a bunch of different scenarios to our current situation called Project Hope. So we've been a nonprofit since about 1992. And we service all of the Gunnison Valley as well as, or Gunnison County, I'm sorry, as well as Hinsdale County. So that's the area that we serve.
And what are some of the services that you guys provide?
We work with people who are victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, and stalking. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's an emergent situation, though oftentimes it is. It can be something that people are processing through that happened to them in years past. Sometimes we deal with family members who need some support for how to help a loved one going through these situations. So it's really, we try to be very creative. And just be a resource for our community and our neighbors that are going through these struggles. We can do anything from emergency shelter to transitional housing. We can help with rental assistance, utilities. As everyone I'm sure is aware, housing in this valley is a challenge for everyone. So you can imagine if someone is trying to leave a situation that's not safe for them, housing then becomes an issue. So we do the best we can to connect them with people that can help those situations. Sometimes it also is best for us to help them get out of this area entirely. So we also support with therapy and all kinds of therapy, talk therapy, acupuncture, massage. We try to meet people where they're at.
Wow, that's great. And so what are the different kind of variables or things that we're facing here in the Gunnison Valley specifically?
So I wish I could tell you a different answer, but we are very busy. We have new clients and intakes almost on a daily basis. And we've not had a break from that for the last month or so. I am new to the Valley myself. I just have been here since the beginning of June, but we have not had a slow time. You know, we all joke about the hope that someday we're all out of a job. You know, wouldn't that be the best scenario? Mm-hmm. But until that day, we just want people to know that we're here, because usually someone will come to a friend or a family member when they're going through a trauma. And if people don't know about us, they don't know where to turn. So we just want to make sure people know that we're here to help.
Yeah, I think that's really important to mention, is that there's a lot of shame and kind of secrecy with domestic violence. And yeah, you talk about how people often go to someone they trust, like a friend, versus an organization, which might be a little bit intimidating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, there's still stigmas. As much as we talk about sexual assault and domestic violence and things, and we're more open now than we were, say, 20 years ago as a country, it is still a taboo subject. And there's a lot of shame and self-doubt and feelings of failure and all of those barriers on top of the trauma that's happened. Yeah. So domestic violence is not just physical, someone hitting another person. Mm. It can be a controlling issue where somebody controls all of the finances and then that person is trapped and has no way out. They could be controlling the other situations like job or even their ability for transportation. I know we have the wonderful free transportation here, but that only gets you so far too. Mm. So there's a lot of different pieces that play into it. And I think sometimes people don't classify themselves as being victims of domestic violence because it's just what they know. Mm. And so we're also trying to make some awareness of what all could qualify you for this. And every case is different.
Yeah. And you kind of mentioned, you know, this is such a taboo subject, and yet you have people walking in every day. It's not something you necessarily read about in the headlines unless it's a celebrity, yeah. Unfortunately. But it's actually quite common.
It absolutely is, unfortunately. We have very strict confidentiality agreements that we sign with our clients. All the staff, volunteers have to go through very rigorous training. So for that reason also, you're not supposed to know about it. You know, that's part of the joy of Project Hope, I guess, if you could say it that way, is it's a safe place for people to tell their story. And the only part of their story that gets shared is the part they want shared. Otherwise, the rest stays very, very secretive.
Yeah. So can we talk about some of the trends that we're seeing nationally versus here locally?
Yeah, absolutely. Statistically, in our nation, 1 out of 4 men is going to experience some kind of domestic violence, sexual assault situation in their lifetime, and 1 out of 3 women. I mentioned the men first because oftentimes we associate this with a woman's issue. Mm. The other populations that are really largely affected by this are anyone with a disability. They have a much higher risk of being victims of many things, domestic violence being one of them. And also the LBG community as well. Mm-hmm. So we're not affiliated with any specific group. We are non-discriminatory. We just meet people where they're at.
Wow, that's great. And so if, for example, someone is in a situation where they feel unsafe, where are you guys located and what happens when someone walks through the door?
So we have an office, but that is something that we keep rather secretive where it is, only because of the confidentiality issue. Mm. We do have a 24/7 crisis line. Again, that's for a crisis situation, and then we have a main phone number that they could call. We have business hours Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. till 4. So if anyone is in a crisis situation, they don't feel safe, they should absolutely call 911. And if it's a situation where they can make themselves safe for the moment, but they need someone to talk to, our crisis line, someone always answers, and I can share that number with you as well. If it's a non-crisis situation, then we would love to hear from people during office hours. And then as long as it's a situation that fits with our mission, we absolutely schedule times for them to come to the office.
Mm, that's great. And so you were kind of talking about some of the misperceptions about domestic violence. Like, it's not just physical violence. It can be financial control or other things.
Yeah.
What are some other misperceptions that people have?
I think what most people would say stereotypically is someone beating the slop out of another person, you know. And absolutely that is domestic violence. But it can also be verbal abuse, the financial piece is a huge part. So you can imagine using the kids as leverage to get the person to do. Any time that one person has major control over another person, whatever the leverage that they're using, that's not okay. It's not a healthy relationship. So all of those types of things could potentially contribute to a bad relationship and domestic violence situation.
So how many people have been served through Project Hope in the past year or in 2022? Because we're not quite through this year.
In 2022, we had 105 clients that we helped. I can tell you that as of our luncheon that we had to kind of share some awareness here in Crested Butte that was on the 15th of September, we had over 150 open cases at that time. And we have continued to probably grow from there. I don't know an exact number at this moment, but it's probably between 160 and 175 open cases.
Wow.
Just in this area. Yeah.
And I'm assuming this is valley-wide, not just within the city of Gunnison?
Correct. Okay. So we have mobile advocacy that we also bring to Western University. We have it in Crested Butte, and we also have it in Lake City. Because we know some of those areas have different situational things going on, or Lake City, in the case of them, they're a little farther away. So we try to make it as easy as possible for people to reach out to us. We also have some bilingual advocates. We just hired one. We have one that is currently bilingual and also speaks Cora. And we're in the process of hiring a second bilingual advocate so that we can better reach that population as well.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned the youth population, students. Do we have any outreach to the schools?
We have in the past gone into the schools and done some outreach. There was some change over recently in our organization. Obviously, I'm newer. So Katie is our outreach director, Katie Thomas. She's amazing. And she is in the process of, she's doing a lot of work with Western already, and she's in the process of trying to get into the local school districts as well. And we've had some good response there. Lake City as well has responded favorably to that. So it's a work in progress.
Yeah. And I know we've had kind of a difficult few years. We've been through a pandemic.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how that impacts your organization?
That definitely has amped things up for us. And that's why we constantly talk about having to be creative. Obviously, I don't think there's a single soul that was not touched in one way or another by the pandemic. We've had to get more creative with how to reach people, because there's still a lot out there that are nervous about being in community with others. So there's that aspect of it. But the bigger picture, I think, for us was during the lockdown. You can imagine if you're in a situation that is sketchy, then being locked together for an indefinite period of time with all these other variables, it didn't bode well for a lot of people. So, but again, if they did not know about us or didn't have resources to get out of that situation, a lot of people have found themselves kind of feeling still stuck there. So part of what we're working on now, like I had said before, is just getting that word out so that people realize that they don't have to settle for this. There are other we all have choices.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes it doesn't feel that way.
Right. And so I know you kind of joked that it would be great if you guys all didn't have jobs.
Correct.
But there's this clear need in the community. What are some of the goals moving forward? I know, like you said, education and just getting the word out.
Absolutely. With with the addition of Katie to our team, our advocates are also carrying a heavy load because they care, and so they walk alongside of every story they hear. So we're working on making sure we do some self-care to continue to nurture healing in the community, because if we're not healed, as one of my staff pointed out to me, if we're not whole, we can't be there to help others. So that's one piece, one component. We've added Katie to the team, and she's getting out there and just going to the community events. And we want to be good community neighbors also. So we want to support the Arts Festival and other activities and things. We were up on Mount CB for some of their events. We've done some of the things in Gunnison with the immigration days and things like that, the welcome week. So we're trying to be more present and just be a better neighbor.
Yeah. What else would you like folks to know about Project Hope?
I think the biggest thing is just awareness, and we would always love to share. The workers are few. So we always are looking for volunteers and help to carry this burden of our neighbors, so to speak. There's just some amazing women and men in this community who really rally. I was so humbled at our fundraiser. Like I said, I'm newer to the Valley. And just the caring and the giving and the support. Not all financial, you know, there's a lot more to support than just dollars. But the women that help pull off the event and everything, there's such a great resource here. And we want to make sure that we're doing everything possible to make sure people know who we are and that they're not afraid to reach out. We work a lot with law enforcement and the victims advocate, Amy Engelman. But if people don't know about her or us or, you know, Maddie Thomas as well, then we miss the mark.
Right. No, that's a great point. Our victims' rights advocate. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
We are really partnering with them a lot. Obviously, if someone is in an imminent situation, we are not law enforcement. We are not equipped to, go in and save the day like the police are. They have a huge job, and they walk into some just volatile situations. So we've been working really hard to partner with them and be a support for them as well. Once they've established kind of a situational assessment, then they can give us a call if they feel it's part of our mission. And then we have some resources that they don't have that we can offer to the victim, the client. And we're lucky in this area. We have so many wonderful police officers that aren't even advocates by name, but really have a heart for our community. And so they reach out to us, and I'm just really excited for the direction that the Valley's going. So maybe there will be a day when we won't be needed, and that would be great.
Yeah, yeah. No, there is a high level of collaboration here, which...
There really is.
It's always so powerful. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's humbling to be a part of it. I came from Pennsylvania, and we did not have anything like this there. So as much as the stories can be bleak, you know, I myself have a background in law enforcement, a background in healthcare, and then I have my own story as well. So this, for me, is an exciting chance to take a bad situation and make it good. So anytime you can do that and have a win, that's amazing. How can you not be excited about that?
Yeah, that does sound like a win-win. For those just tuning in, that is Project Hope Executive Director Amy Kirschbaum, and she's talking about the organization and a lot of the services that they offer. So your guys' website is hope4, the number 4,
yes,
GV, www.hopeexecutivedirector.org.
Yes.
Okay, great.
And all this information that I referred to is there. There's also comment section. You can give us some feedback. We don't know it all. We're still learning. We learn every day. And we would be fools not to take people's advice and guidance. So even if people listening have some thoughts or ideas for how we could be better, we're always open to that.
Yeah.
Like I said, we try to be creative and figure out how we can best serve our community. But the crisis line phone number is on that website.
Great.
The business, the office hours, and the business phone number is on there too.
Wonderful. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share? We have a few minutes left.
I'm just really, I guess I'm just still so, I keep saying I'm humbled, but I don't know a better word to explain it. I myself have felt so loved and accepted in this community, and I just feel blessed that I get to be a part of all of this. And Project Hope is, it's an exciting time to be part of it, because I really think we're just scratching the surface for all the good that's going to happen here.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, gosh. Thanks for letting us come. I appreciate it.
Anytime. You are listening to Community Matters. Stay tuned. We have got more news coming up.